You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in again to the Wisconsin Sports Heroics Podcast on the Packernet Podcast Network. My name is Sam Holman, and I'm here with my co-host, McQuaid Arnold. McQuaid, how are you doing today?
I am stoked to be back for another week of this podcast. We just got back from our annual trip to the Brewers game for the Wisconsin Sports site. It was a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah. It sounds like it from the social media posts and stuff I saw. I wasn't able to make it. Living on the Pacific Northwest, it's a little pricey to get out to Green Bay, or not Green Bay, but Wisconsin.
Yep.
It sounds like a lot of fun, and maybe I'll be able to make it out for something similar in the future.
Yeah, I think we're going to do some more in the future. I'm excited.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so we don't really have much news here, kind of the depths of the off season. So we did do a mailbag. We've got some questions here that we're going to get to. But first, McQuaid, you had an interesting story. I believe it was either today or a couple days ago where you kind of wrote about some possible additions the Packers might make in free agency as the off season goes on.
Yeah, so Rob Demoski, the Packers ESPN beat reporter, releases his early 53-man ranking for 53-man roster for week one for the Packers, and he added in part of it being that he thinks that one addition that could be made, and he thinks that Packers are actively pursuing, is signing someone at the pass rusher position slash outside linebacker. And this is something that we've talked about, I think, in length all offseason. I think the only other position that we've seen talked about in nauseam as far as adding a free agent is wide receiver and then pass rusher. So the fact that Rob Demoski is now reporting on it would make you think that there's definitely talk around the front office and 1265 Lombardi Avenue as far as actually bringing in someone. And it would make sense, one year removed from Green Bay trying to do the same thing with Whitney Mercilus.
Yeah.
Who unfortunately tore his I think it was his pec.
I think it was his bicep, maybe somewhere around there. Yeah.
Either way, had a season-ending injury, and so coming into this season, and that was with basically Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary being our only two pass rushers. We're going into another season of just that. Now with Za'Darius Smith officially gone, so I think this is a move that not only would make sense, but it's something that Green Bay has done exactly 1 year ago. So. And then on top of that, this offseason, there's a lot of pass rushers that are still available. We're sitting
here
mid, end of June, almost early July, and there's still quite a few that are available that we could see be taken by almost any team out there that needs any kind of pass rush. And the three names that I had that I included in my article were Justin Houston, who's been a Hall of Fame caliber career for the last decade or so. Jason Pierre-Paul, who's still had success even in his mid-30s in Tampa Bay and won a Super Bowl a few years ago. He's actually averaged eight sacks a season over his last four seasons in Tampa Bay. So his play hasn't fallen off. And then Dante Hightower, who I don't know if you would claim him as a necessarily pass rusher, but he would be a very, very, very good inside to outside linebacker who can fill gaps anywhere on the defensive line. So those are all pass rushers or slash Whitney Mercilus type players that Green Bay could come in and sign, just like they did last year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we, like you said, we've talked about, possibly adding an edge rusher. The depth there is kind of dubious. The Packers, if they didn't add anyone, they would be depending on a couple pretty young and unproven players to step up into significant roles. So I would definitely, be pretty stoked if they were able to add a veteran there to just give some quality depth. But that's kind of the extent of the news. Like I said, it's kind of the dry season, the NFL schedule. So we were able to get a mailbag in, get a couple questions. This is something we'll hopefully be doing every month or so, at least up until the season begins, or preseason around there. So I'll just go ahead and dive into some of these questions here. So I posted this, one from Facebook here from Garrett Stritzel, So Garrett asks, what are some comparisons of the 2000 Baltimore Ravens and this year's defense that can be made? Ooh. What is the best guess for this team to have in shutouts, points allowed, yards allowed for the season? The weak conference should be a help in this. So I did a little bit of research just kind of looking at the 2000 Ravens. I don't know that they'll be super comparable just because the Ravens defense was kind of in a whole different era where there was a lot more focus around, you know, rushing the ball rather than passing. And that's where the Ravens really had their strength, right? They, looking at their stats, they were first in the league in rushing yards allowed. They only allowed 970 rushing yards. They were first in the league in touchdowns allowed on the ground, only allowed 5 all season. And then they allowed a average yards per carry of 2.7. Which again was first in the league. And so comparing that to their passing stats, which were a little bit worse, I mean, they were all still in the top 10 for the most part. They in passing, they allowed about 2,997 yards, which was 8th in the league. They allowed 11 touchdowns, which was 2nd in the league. And then they had 23 interceptions, which was 5th in the league. So I think that the, you know, the Packers defense for a couple different reasons is going to be different from the Ravens 2000s defense. I'm not sure if like the Packers defense, I'm not sure if I'm ready to say that they'll be like one of the greatest defenses of all time, which the 2000 Ravens were. I think they could be a very good defense and maybe the best defense of this year, but I don't know if I'm willing to go to that, those lengths. And, you know, I think that the focus will be more on defending the pass rather than defending the run. And we may see teams, you know, put up some rushing yards against the Packers. The question is going to be, you know, can the Packers defend the run enough with light boxes to make offenses pass the ball more?
You know, it's crazy to see these type of questions regarding this defense. And I mean, it's all across Packer Nation, but this, yeah, we got to remember, this is a defense that ranked, I think it was 22nd or 23rd in DVOA last year.
Yeah.
In middle of the pack in a lot of major categories. So, but that's not to say that they don't have that potential to be that number one defense this year. It's just we have to temper expectations. If Green Bay has a top 10 defense this year, I'm happy with that, right?
Yeah.
In most major categories, top 10, I'm happy with that, right? I think that Aaron Rodgers can win a Super Bowl with that type of defense. However, right, we got to remember this is a defense that was bombarded with injuries last year. They're getting back their best cornerback and possibly the best cornerback in the entire NFL in Jaire Alexander. And added to a secondary that already played lights out last year. And then, you know, they brought back possibly the best inside linebacker who that Green Bay has seen at least single season worth-wise since, you know, maybe A.J. Hawk, but I don't even think A.J. Yeah. Hawk played the pass like Devonta Campbell did last year. So I'm on the board with it. I'm on board with being, you know, with number one defense in the league, but I think we also need to remember that if we just top 10, that's a major improvement this year.
Yeah, I would agree. Like you said, I think that we're all aboard, you know, the defense being one of the best in the league. But I think, you know, we need to, you know, not necessarily, like, start comparing them to, like, the 85 Bears. Like, we're not – I don't know if it's going to be – it's just hard to say if they're going to be, you know, that caliber of defense, because that's, like, a once-in-a-lifetime defense for the most part for most teams. And so – yeah, it's kind of risky or dubious to claim that type of production. The second part of his question was kind of interesting. Garrett asks, so what was the best guess for shutouts, points allowed, yards allowed? I kind of took the path of comparing it to the Ravens' defense again, but that's not necessarily what we have to do. For shutouts, I think it's a little bit shutouts, I think, are a little bit hard to predict because I think they depend on a lot of different stuff that can vary a lot year to year, like turnovers. And so that's something I don't know that's a reliable predictor for defensive success. I would, you know, if the Packers get a couple, like 2 to 3 shutouts in the year, I would be ecstatic with that. I think it's possible, especially with like how weak the Bears are, some of the weaker teams the Packers play, like the Washington Commanders. They could maybe shut out some of those offenses, but I don't think they'll, you know, I doubt that they'll be able to get, you know, more than maybe 2 shutouts or maybe 3.
I think that you know, exactly hit in the head. You can never predict a shutout. A late, you know, garbage time touchdown could ruin a perfectly good, you know, shutout performance from a defense.
Yeah.
But however many times, I think a better question is how many times the Packers defense holds an opponent under 10 points.
Right.
And that is a valid question. I think that could happen 4 to 5 times this year, and that might be even on the lower end. You know what I mean? They have a favorable strength of schedule this year. The Bears twice and the Lions once are both candidates for at least 3 of those. Like we've talked about with how bad the you know that Bears offense is projected to be. But just like anything else, you can't guarantee something like that. But holding opponents to 2 scores or less is very realistic. That could, 14 points or less, that could happen mm-hmm. 8 games this year. That could happen half the season this year. That's how good this defense is.
Yeah, and just to kind of, so the Ravens, like we meant kind of covered, they were in a different era of football where there's a lot more focus on running the ball. They allowed about 10 points per game. A couple of the better defenses we've seen in recent years, the 2021 Bills allowed 17 points per game, and the 2020 Rams allowed 18.5 points per game. So I think that though, like the numbers for the Rams and the Bills, I could definitely see the Packers allowing that, like around 18, 19 points a game. I think that could be, at the top end of what we could expect from them, even though it's not obviously guaranteed. But if they're, especially if they're, in the top 5, top 3, I could definitely see that type of performance from them.
Yeah, I think the biggest concern that I'm going to see, last year we had that great, legendary performance against the Rams. It was, but the final score was, 32 to 46, whatever. The final score was high scoring, right? Green Bay won. We won by 8 points, but I don't know if Green Bay's offense puts up 42 points again this year against a above average defense, and the Rams do have an above average defense. So it's going to be performances like that we see this defense not allow the Rams to score 32 right. points and allow Green Bay to score 27 and still win. So that's kind of the difference. I think those are the type of differences that I want to see this year.
Yeah.
Going from last year to this year.
Yeah. And then the last part, the yards allowed. I mean, the top defenses the last couple of years, they allowed around, let me see, around like 2,800, 2,700 yards for the entire year. So aim around somewhere around that. I think you'd be pretty happy with that performance. But yeah, I think that, like we kind of have mentioned a couple times, I think it's a little bit too early to proclaim the Packers defense potentially one of the greatest of all time. I think we could say, they could be top 5, they could be the best in the league. I think that's reasonable with the personnel that they have. But yeah, I don't think I'm ready to, say they could be one of the top in history.
Yeah, that's high hopes there.
Yeah. And another question on Facebook about the defense actually comes from Andy Monday. So he has a 2-part question. One, he asks, which Packer should do ads for Quick Trip? And then he asks, which improvement in the defense will help in the red zone D the most? So first question, which Packer should do ads for Quick Trip? McQuaid, what do you think about this?
I think could do some ads. A great question. I think that there's a lot of good candidates, but I'm gonna go with Mercedes Lewis. He's a fan favorite in Green Bay. Okay. People love him.
Yeah,
I think people love to see him at Quick Trips and see him in those commercials. Those he's kind of one of those different fan favorites, but everyone in Green Bay has fallen in love with him in the couple of years he's been here. That'd be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Rashawn Gary, kind of for similar reasons. He's becoming a fan favorite. There's a lot of hype surrounding him. Get him on, get him to do some ads. He can, I think, sell some products for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then second part of his question, which improvements in the defense will help the red zone D the most? I'm going to go with, being able to play more man coverage, because that's one thing I noticed about the defense last year is Joe Barry kind of liked to play man coverage in the red zone a little bit more. Sometimes he used it in blitz, like blitz coverages, just man coverages without any deep safeties. Sometimes it was just, straight man coverage. But I think that, adding Jair back, having him as one of your top 3 corners, and then adding Quay Walker, who can match up with tight ends and running backs, I think that being able to play man coverage, more sticky man coverage in the red zone will help their performance improve in that area.
I like that answer. And I think that's man coverage is one of those important things you can do in red zone defense, especially because so many teams like to throw that back shoulder fade in the end zone. But I think I'm going to, in the direction you touched on it, Quay Walker, but I think that having a red zone package that features both Quay Walker and Devondre Campbell
is yeah.
going to exponentially increase what your defense can do in the red zone. Not even just man coverage. I think man coverage definitely included in that, but you have two linebackers who are freak of nature athletes who can
yeah.
cover sideline to sideline. I don't think we've had an athlete like Quay Walker and at the linebacker position in a long time. That guy, if you watch his film, he can go sideline to sideline. He matches running back speed. He hits the right gap often, more times than not. And then you know, obviously in the passing game, that speed comes into play. Bootlegs, rollouts, those are the type of plays that Quay
yeah.
Walker will be impactful on. I think having packages with both those linebackers on the field would be huge, absolutely huge in the red zone.
Yeah, that's a good point, because in the red zone, right, you're not offenses aren't trying to attack deep. They're trying to attack like horizontally. And so having guys that can run sideline to sideline can be a really, really big, you know, important thing in that aspect of the game. Like, go ahead.
I was like, and you know, like, I want to say pass rusher, but it's almost, you know, pass rushers are so often nullified at this point, at this part of the field, because it's three-step drop and they throw the ball. That's
yeah.
what red zone offenses are designed to do. So you almost have to choose, a different position.
Yeah, yeah, and one of the things that kind of comes to mind of talking about like that horizontal quick attack is the Chris Barnes, that goal line hit he laid down on that Chiefs running back in that
yep.
game. That's the kind of play that, you know, if you can get that consistently from your inside linebackers, I think that can really help your red zone defense.
Yeah, that would be huge.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, and then going to some questions that we got from Twitter. So these are a little bit more offensive focused. There is one defensive question, one more defensive question. So we can start with that. This is from Richard Fitzwell at Gooseborn or Gosborn, GOSEBOURNE1. That's his Twitter handle. So he asks, who plays more defensive snaps this upcoming season, Wyatt or Walker? Do you want to take this one?
Yeah, I think that it is Devontae Wyatt, and I don't think it's close. And I don't think it's because Quay Walker isn't ready or he isn't impactful. I just think that Green Bay is going to see packages and see how successful it is with Wyatt and Clark on the field at the same time, and they're going to exploit that and do that all game long, or as much as the game that they can, especially in short yardage situations,
yeah.
especially in red zone packages, where I know I just said that pass rushers can oftentimes be nullified in the red zone, but if you have two guys blowing up the middle of your offensive line almost immediately, it does impact what you can do in the red zone. I think that Wyatt and Kenny Clark on the field at the same time is going to be very, very important to what this defense does on a consistent basis. I think that Walker is going to be slowly kind of brought into the pass defense, the situational ball, the, you know, red zone coverages. I think that Quay Walker is going to be learning for a long time, but I think that Wyatt can come in and produce right now.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go the other direction. I'm going to say Quay Walker has more snaps just because, I mean, you make a good point. You know, if he's, you know, a little slow getting acclimated to the defense, you know, if Chris Barnes starts the year as the starting inside linebacker, kind of seems like it's trending towards Quay being the starter, but we don't know at this point. I mean, it's just OTAs. I think that with how much the defensive line is rotated, just for that reason alone, why it might spend less snaps on the field than Quay Walker, because the Packers are going to want to be in their nickel package with two inside linebackers or their 3-4 package with two inside linebackers pretty much the entire game. But yeah, I mean, it could go either way. Like you said, if there's some delay in Quay, adjusting to, the NFL level. And I think, I can't remember if it was you who wrote about it, but someone wrote about it on Wisconsin Sports Heroics about how he was having a little trouble adjusting, right? He was still getting his feet under him in OTAs. And so if that extends, if he has some trouble staying on the field, passing downs, running downs, whatever it is, yeah, I could definitely see why it, taking the lead in snaps.
I think it was about him losing his confidence when he first got there. But I don't, before we even address that part of it, I answered this question in my mind that both of these players were 100% ready to start and ready to go. I don't think that anyone challenges Quay Walker for that linebacker 2 spot. And I don't think that anyone challenges Devontae Wyatt for that number 2 defensive tackle spot outside. I mean, I guess Jaron Reed, he's going to be there. And I guess that may throw some kinks into some things, but
yeah,
for what Devontae Wyatt can bring to this defense, I think they're gonna love seeing big heavy up fronts. And Quay Walker, he is not gonna be utilized less than Devontae Wyatt because he's not effective or because he doesn't make the play. I think that he's gonna be brought in more in situational. Football then and Devontae Wyatt is going to be out there just consistently wrecking guys. But instead it could go either way.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we can move on to some offensive questions here. So this one's from Matt Pickett. That's at Matt Trombone. He says, at the midpoint of the season, which Packers player has the most catches and or yards, and how about by the end of the season? He also asks a bonus question, but we can cover this one first. So at the midpoint of the season, who has the most catches and or yards? So that I took that as it can be a different player. Like one player might have more yards at the midpoint and one player might have more catches at the midpoint. And then he asked that same question for the end of the season. So I'll cover this one first real quick. So I think that by the midpoint of the season, I think that the leader in yards will be Aaron Jones, just because he's going to be involved in the passing game, involved in the running game as well, as kind of the new weapons get their feet under them a little bit. I think catches, and I think this, I think that my answer might be the same for both the midpoint and the end of the season. I think that Allen Lazard is going to lead the team in catches, just because kind of he's the sure hand, he's the veteran who's been there a while. He knows the offense, Aaron Rodgers trusts him. He has good hands, all that stuff. He can do some stuff in the offense. I think that for both the midpoint and the end of the season, he'll lead the team in catches, and Aaron Jones will lead the team in total yards.
I'm on the same page with you when it comes to catches. I think that Allen Lazard is going to be that third down reliable target that Aaron Rodgers kind of used Devontae Adams for, and no other reason other than the fact that Rodgers trusts Lazard. Lazard has produced when he's been on the field. He's shown that he's reliable. He's reliable hands. So I don't think there's any fall off when it comes to trust with Aaron Rodgers and Allen Lazard this season. If anything, that's going to make Allen Lazard solidified as a Green Bay's number one receiver. But for yards, I'm going to go with Sammy Watkins. I think that he's going to be that deep threat. I think he's going to come in and be healthy. He's going to produce. He's already said that this is kind of his. This is it. This is his year. He wants to show this year that he can come in and be the guy that he was supposed to be when he was drafted. I think that he has high expectations for himself. Aaron Rodgers loves him in Green Bay. But to caveat of both of those, I think that both second in catches is Aaron Jones, and I think both second in yards is Aaron Jones. I think that Aaron Jones is going to be a huge part of this passing game. And I think that while Allen Lazard might have the most catches, he might be, third on the team in yards, because it'll be so many situational, third and short, third and five type of receptions.
Yeah, honestly, I think it can go a lot of different ways, because I think that this is going to be kind of an offense where we're kind of like, we've seen running back by committee. I think we could see receiver by committee for this offense. Like, there might be four guys with 700 yards and seven touchdowns or something like that. And so it might not be like there's one clear leader in, you know, either catches or yards or whatever. But there's just a bunch of guys who, you know, get production based on how Matt LaFleur game plans each week, where he's trying to exploit weaknesses, where Aaron Rodgers wants to go, all that sort of thing. So I think it's kind of up in the air, and I don't know if there will be a clear leader, you know, either midpoint or end of the season, but it'll definitely be interesting to watch.
You know, if you want to try and look at, you know, the glass half full type of thing, no one will ever say that any team is better with Devontae Adams off the roster, right? But there is a big but to that. I think we all saw many of those throws against the 49ers in the playoff game where it was Devontae Adams double covered and someone else running open in the middle of the field, and Aaron Rodgers threw it through Devontae because he knows Devontae can make those plays. Instead of that connection in that game, in that situation, we have three or four guys who are all just good at what they're doing. Aaron Rodgers will have a tendency to not just target in on one guy. And it's kind of a tricky line to walk there. Again, no way is any offense ever better with Devontae Adams off the field. But when you come back and you possibly have Alan Lazard, Sammy Watkins, and then fill in the blank, as a just a good reliable target, the defense has to worry about all of them rather than just Devontae Adams.
Yeah, definitely. And then the kind of bonus question that Matt asks, he asked, do you think we'll pick up another starter level receiver before week one, and do we even need one? What's your take on this?
So prior to Sammy Watkins, I've been beating the wall for Will Fuller. I love Will Fuller. I know he's guys injury issues, but I think that went out the window when we got Sammy Watkins. At this point, it's in my opinion, it's Julio Jones or no one. I think he's the last big name out there. I don't think there's any way Green Bay spends some money on Odell Beckham Jr. for half a season, even though I would like that move for a playoff push. If he's not signed by half of the season,
yeah,
they wants to make, maybe at that point in time, we can revisit this conversation. But at this point in time, we have no need for Will Fuller, as much as I would love it, because we got Sammy Watkins. I think that, you know, we're among the three or four favorite teams to sign Julio Jones. And if we see an unfortunate injury in training camp or OTAs or, you know, what's to come, then that definitely skyrockets that likelihood. But if we go into week one with all the wide receivers that we have on the roster right now, I think it's kind of a 49% chance that we do sign a wide receiver, you know, 51% chance we roll with what we got. So I think it's close,
but yeah,
if nothing changes between now and then, I don't see a signing us a wide receiver, to be honest with you, as much as I would love it.
Yeah. I kind of agree. I don't think at this point they're going to sign anyone major, at least. I just think the money doesn't really match up with the need there, right? Where the guys that we could add, like you said, Julio Jones would be probably more expensive than Green Bay would be willing to pay. So I think they'll probably just roll with who they have and, you know, adjust in season as they might need to, and given who's available. But yeah, that'll be another thing that we'll be obviously watching as training camp rolls along, and maybe we see some injuries. Hopefully not, but that can always happen.
You know, I think that if Green Bay does allocate money, because they have money. I mean, they're second right now, or third right now in NFL cap space, so they have the money, right? So that's not necessarily
right.
Holding them back. But I do think that if they were to allocate funds to something, I don't think wide receiver is number one on their list. I think it's, like we talked about earlier, the pass rusher, and then safety number three. You know, we have some possible, you know, guys on the roster who can come in and contribute. But if you want to make a splash move for like a Landon Collins, who's a free agent right now, who's going to come in and not be asked whatsoever to be your starting coverage safety, but he comes in and plays box safety, plays hybrid linebacker safety role. With a veteran like that, Landon Collins, who's been to the Pro Bowl, who's played outstanding football, and now you're asking him to have a shell of the responsibilities that he used to have on a defense where he's not the best safety anymore, and he buys into it and he
trusts
it. That's where I see money, you know, allocating being allocated to, and our front office being more willing to spend on, rather than, you know, Julio Jones or something like that.
Yeah, and you know, as tempting as a name like Julio Jones sounds like, and I think that he would make the team better, I think that the path to playing time is a lot, like, quicker for some, for like a third safety or a third edge rusher, right? There, the wide receivers, it's kind of crowded with veterans a little bit. Not necessarily like, well, we don't know for sure at this point, but not a whole lot of like top end names. But Alan Lazard, Randall Cobb, Sammy Watkins, there's a lot of guys at the top who are going to be competing for snaps, and that, you know, as players who have been in the system for longer than anyone they would pick up at this point, really, unless, I don't know, they got out. Went out and traded for Jake Kumar or something. Yeah. I think that they would probably be earlier on the depth chart, and so that the path to playing time would be a little bit harder, just given, you know, what the offense asks of its wide receivers. But yeah, like you mentioned, it's probably, you know, someone like Landon Collins probably makes a little bit more sense at this point, just given money needs, all that sort of thing. Okay, so the last question we have here, we kind of covered it a little bit with some of the earlier questions. Logan Hilgers at Bernie Bango asks, where does Aaron Jones finish on the team for catches this season? I think we kind of talked about, you know, him being involved in the passing game a little bit more, so I don't feel like we need to rehash that a whole lot. I would say he will probably be, I think that he could be third on the team in catches. You know, if they throw the ball 65 times or something to him, it wouldn't surprise me. I think his career high was in 2021. Well, his career high in receptions, he had 52 in 2021. His career high in targets was actually in 2019 when he had 68 targets, but he caught less of them than he did in 2021. So yeah, I think around 65, 70 targets would definitely be a possibility for him, and I think that'd be good enough for him to, you know, land third, maybe even second on the depth chart in terms of catches.
Yeah, so I think that we're gonna see AJ Dillon be the leading rusher on the team.
Yeah,
but Aaron Jones is going to have more all-purpose yards, and
right,
he's next year. You know, Aaron Jones is set to make that $20 million cap hit, and I don't think, obviously, I don't think there's any way that we pay that. However, I think that Aaron Jones is going to be asked to play a type of role this year that won't make Packers fans, or, you know, quite frankly, the front office, which is the most important part, scared of paying him close to $20 million, right? If Aaron Jones comes out and does what I think they're going to ask of him to do, be a weapon, be a Debo Samuel, if you will, right?
This, yeah, type
of offense. Green Bay's, they're gonna pony up next year to keep him in Green Bay. But at the end of the day, like, going into the season, that is a type of role they're going to ask him to play, $20 million worth of value this year, because, right, of the wide receiver, because of the running back that we do have behind him, so that we have the luxury to place him wherever we want. Aaron Jones is going to be asked to do a lot this year.
Yeah, yeah, like, kind of like we talked about earlier, you know, just as they search for matchup problems, you know, maybe they try to get him lined up on a linebacker or a safety somewhere where he can get an advantage in the passing game. I think he'll definitely be used as a weapon in that way. Yeah. But that was kind of the last question we had. So, McQuaid, before we get out of here, did you have any final thoughts?
No, I'm excited for training camp. It's almost, yeah, July, and that means it's almost closer to football.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening to another episode of the Wisconsin Sports Heroics podcast, and have a great day or evening or whatever time it is when you're listening to this.